Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome into the Yachts and Audibles podcast. It's Wednesday. I believe last week around this time, we were recapping the end of the men's basketball season. Today, myself, Eric Scopel, and Jared Mack will be doing the same on the women's side. Jared, thanks for joining us. How are we doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Eric?
I don't know. We don't usually do greetings or that kind of like check-in
thing. I know. We just jump right into it.
I thought we'd try it today just to see how it felt. I don't know.
How did it feel?
It wasn't a rousing success, but you know, I'm open to do it. We'll give it another try another time. No, but we're here today. to talk a little bit about how the Oregon women's basketball program is doing. I think this was just to start off the top here, probably the first sentence is the most obvious. It was a really disappointing season. Expectations were probably maybe higher externally than they should have been in retrospect, especially once you saw Sedona go down and miss the season. And then the Jenna Saik component, once you entered conference play with nine players, another team had been doing well. Expectations got really high and they just completely crumbled. But still, this is a team that's picked to finish, I believe, second in the Pac-12 this year. A team that at least returned a couple of key players that were starters in the backcourt. Brought in some highly regarded players. And again, I think in retrospect, if you would have said, okay, well, they're basically bringing in three new starters, two of which are true freshmen, the third of which basically has 4 years of basketball playing experience, you could kind of understand, like, yeah, there might be some ups and downs. They're relying on a lot of young players. So all of that like has to be kind of weighed in on the calculus. But I don't think there's any way to argue like, oh, no, this was not a disappointing or concerning season. No, like, this is a year where, again, they started 12-3. And then completely fell off. I don't even know what the term is, like 2-10 after that. And just the whole season, it feels like it's gone away, including nine straight losses. And then they kind of gave you some encouraging moments in the postseason at the end of the year, finished 6-2, a lot of really big wins to start the WNIT at home. They beat the Arizona schools pretty decisively at home. So there's some kind of nice moments. So kind of what maybe this team could look like, you know, and like in some of the best of its kind of versions. But I think still all in all, you come away going like, boy, this is not, I think, where most people anticipated Oregon would be after Sabrina's career came to a close, 3 years removed now. And I think the direction doesn't feel great either. And you can get, again, we can choose to be optimistic about the development of young players, but you need to see it, and there's a possibility, and we'll get to some of this at the end here, Jared, and I'll let you talk because I've done a lot of it here. But, you know, the development of young players, but there might also be some older players that, who knows, we don't really have clarity of what their plans are going forward. So this is really a program kind of in a weird spot right now, and we're kind of hitting you on the first day that the season's really kind of over, it feels like, or one of those first days. So I don't know. How's everything kind of hitting you?
I mean, yeah, they're in a very strange spot, just like you said. They got a lot of question marks around their younger players. They got a lot of question marks around their older players. In some strange parallel universe, there's a world where like Oregon has zero players returning next season. But I don't think that's going to be what's happening in this universe. They at least have some building blocks, though. They have some pieces that they can go into next season and say, okay, we can build around these X amount of players. Philly Che, Grace Van Sloten, and Chance Gray, those are your preliminary building blocks, and you know, you want to use those players properly. But yeah, basically overall mentioned, it was a really rocky season. You go back to that 12-3 start, which, gosh, feels like forever ago that it happened, because at the time it was like, how? Like, look at this. 12-3 start, and their losses were to tournament teams, and to tournament teams who, in Ohio State's case, made a deep tournament run. And then the conference play hit, and it was a whole conglomeration of things where shots weren't falling, defense was kind of being played at points, kind of not being played at other points. Dramatic comeback losses, dramatic blowouts, dramatic have the lead late into the game and then completely see it squander in like the final 3.5 minutes of a game loss. Any way that you could lose, Oregon women's basketball found a way to lose it during that 2-10 stretch. It was a tough scene to watch. And you mentioned how different it is to 3 years post Sabrina. I think it's a wonderful way to describe it. It's not the same product on the court, which I get is really, really difficult to do when you have, you know, 3 first-round picks on one team to the WNBA in Satu Savali and Sabrina and Ruthie Hebert. But I feel like at this point, there's a different standard that people expect Oregon women's basketball to play to, and it just wasn't that this season.
Well, the baseline is making the NCAA tournament, and that's not and that's not an expectation that we on the exterior are setting. That's one that they've set internally and made very clear, and that they want to win the conference. I mean, that was a thing that was being talked about after they started 2-1. I think they maybe were 3-1 in conference play to open. There was some like, oh yeah, we're going to try to win conference. And then they lost some games. Like, oh, well, it's going to be hard to get back in the race. Like, but it feels like forever ago because they ended up finishing with a losing record in conference and finished tied for 8th and with a 9 seed in the conference tournament. But, you know, there were utterances at least in January and February, maybe not even into February, but in January at least, of like, hey, maybe we can push for something here, and then it just completely fell apart. And so I wanted to get to some of the hows and the whys maybe of this, or at least as best we can. You look through this team here, I think, and there were some very, very strange shooting splits. And we talked about this in the pod, and I've written about it a little bit on Dove Run Duck Territory, but you look at where Tahina Pau Pau was during that run, and I don't think it's really any surprise that you would struggle to win games when, and I've got some advanced stats pulled up here, and her usage rate is pretty high on this team, right? One of the primary ball handlers, balls in her hands a lot, and her offense just completely fell off a cliff, and then the team's offensive rating completely fell off a cliff. I've got this pulled up here, but there was a stretch here where, outside of this incredible, by the way, kind of tucked in the middle here, you forget about is this Utah game where, I forget, Jared, were you with me on that game, or was that Jackson? That was where they scored 92.
I was not there for that one, okay. But I remember it and being like, holy cow.
It was this greatest shooting performance. Yeah, it was this game where Utah was incredible offensively. Oregon was was probably their best game of the year offensively. And actually, it pretty much bears out. I just was looking at the numbers. Yeah, it's like it's their best offensive rated game in conference, all of conference play. But around it are these absolutely miserable showings against Stanford and Colorado and USC and UCLA and Washington State, and then against Washington. Yeah. And all of those are losses. And then that's where we start to see kind of the season flip, where Tahina, kind of feels like out of nowhere, and she's now gone on, and we can talk about some of the whys there, but then she flips the switch and they go on this run. But I think you saw how important, in that run, it was for a team that just didn't have a lot of options offensively to have as many options going. And when one of those key players was really off for a game, and again, the stats were pretty miserable. I think she was shooting 18% from three. Turning the ball over, scoring like 6 points per game after being like a 12 to 13 point scorer before that, finished the season on a crazy tear, as we've talked about. But, I just think you saw kind of the limitations of this roster, where if one of those primary three with Rogers, Van Sloten, and Pau Pau weren't on their games, it was a problem. And then what really hit was then Van Sluten gets hurt, and now two of your three aren't there. And at a certain point, India is kind of looking around going, well, she's got a bad ankle. We don't know what's going on with Tahina in terms of the mental part. The shot's just not there. The confidence is gone. And I think that had to be a really tough stretch for everybody on that team, because then you're turning and going, who are we relying on? And the answers are Chance Gray, a true freshman who had moments of brilliance, but as you expect with freshmen, some moments that weren't quite as good. Philly Che, who's a great defensive big and a good rebounder, but gosh, is she not very good offensively, and you can't really look to her for offense other than finishes around the rim. And even sometimes that was spotty. And then the bench that was really up and down, with Hurst being hot for a month here and then terrible for a month there. And it's kind of the same thing with Hansen, who was more consistent, but never super consistent. So, you know, it was just you could imagine where the issues came from. And it was strange watching like Kelly Graves' team struggle so much offensively for a run there, because that is very much not the issues any Kelly Graves teams that I've ever covered have had, really, up until basically these last couple of years. So, you know, I think this is a team we thought was going to be built because of, you know, I don't know if it's surprising. This team was going to kind of go as far as its guards would let them. And when they were winning games, their guards were really good. And when they weren't losing games, their guards, or at least one of them and a couple of them in particular, weren't very good.
Yeah, oh, 100%. And you go back to that whatever that was, that 7-game losing streak in the middle of the season.
Nine
games. Sorry. Wait, just, three, six, seven. I'm looking at, oh no, it's 9 of 10. They had one win in Cal tucked in there. But I'm looking at their offensive rating numbers, and like you were mentioning, they're just miserable. You know, 79.4, and when 100 is like standard, by the way, for those listening. 79.4, 76.8, 79.7, 79.2. Like when you're in the 70s, consistently in the 70s, that is horrendous. I think this recent stretch, this WNIT stretch, really was kind of propelled by their defense too. They turned that around, which seemingly was, no, it wasn't seemingly, it was very surprising, because, you know, during that losing stretch, they were allowing, you know, 91, 90, 140 to that Utah, 103 to UCLA, 101.5 points per 100 possessions during that losing streak. And then in the WNIT, again, albeit against inferior competition, but yeah, good enough competition. I mean, compared to the Pac-12, I granted the Pac-12.
These are at least teams that had winning records in their regular season and were winning teams. These aren't scrub teams that were bad in their conference. These are teams that were like second or third in smaller conferences.
Right. They made the WNIT. Like, I'm just comparing them to the Pac-12 teams, sure, which was a really good conference this season. But anyways, here, you know, their defensive rating against Arizona was 84.3, which is a real Pac-12 team. Arizona State, 66.7. Washington, the first time around, was 83.3. And then North Dakota State, Rice, and San Diego all were held under 87, and two of them were held under 80. Like, that's really good defensively. And, I mean, I feel like we should jump into the Tahina Pau Pau stuff, because that was – if her – monumental jump into becoming like what she was before in her career and becoming this absolute knockdown shooter that physically couldn't miss, it seemed like, for 2 weeks straight. You know, if that comes earlier in the season and then they kind of figured things out before that terrible stretch run, I'm not sure where this team would be, because that was the biggest issue, was, you know, your guard play, like you said, Eric, was extremely inconsistent. And India Rogers had to do so much during a time where it seemed like no matter how much she did, they just weren't going to get a win because she wasn't going to get any help. And, you know, India Rogers kept them in a lot of close games because of her play, but they needed somebody like Tahina to step up, or Grace Van Sluten or Chance Gray. And, you know, it's harder to rely on true freshmen. It's easier to rely on Tahina Pau Pau, but she just couldn't hit a shot for forever. And you look at her true shooting numbers now,
it's incredible.
They're pretty impressive.
It's incredible.
And it's like, you know, her effective field goal percentage was almost 55%. She finished the year shooting 42% from deep. Like, I'd love to know what those numbers were before that stretch run during the end of the season, because it wasn't even close.
She improved by close to 10 percentage points. It was probably, I'm talking 3-point percentage. I didn't look at the true field goal percentage stuff, but no, it was 33, 34 range. Cause I remember looking and it was pretty comparable to what it had been, the first 2 years combined. And then this last run, like just blistering. And you're right. Like, you know, because if you look at the season, I did a pretty extended story. And I remember the splits there where she had a run where she averaged about 12 points per game on like pretty good through a pretty good shooting. It was like 45 from the field, 38 from three. And then she had that run, which we talked about, where it was like 6 points per game with 25% from the field, 18% from three. And then I didn't, this was before the last couple of games, but at one point she was averaging like 21 points per game on like 58% shooting from the field and like 67% shooting from three over that extended stretch when she kind of started figuring it out. So yeah, no, I mean, I think that's the thing that was tough was, to your point, you do just wonder if she just carries out some level of a combination of the first and the third parts of the season in the second part, you know, if she's just kind of somewhere in between, they might have won an extra three or four games and we're probably going,
at least
didn't live up to expectations, but at least they made the tournament. This is going to be good experience. And there's just a general more positive feeling around it. And again, I don't want to say, it's obviously way more nuanced and complicated than that, but to a certain point, yeah, like if they just would have been getting this type of production from her that they got at other parts in the season, the year goes differently. And then I think the other big one was Grace Van Sluten and just her just nagging injuries. Mm-hmm. She finished non-conference play at this level where you were going like, gosh, they're at least going to have a really marquee post presence all season. She scored. I think she had this run down the stretch there. I can pull it up. We're against, maybe you can pull it up there, Jared. Her close to finish non-conference play, which also included, I think, maybe the Oregon State game. But she had a run there where she was scoring about 20, 26 points per game, or 20 points, 26 points, 24 points, something like that, over like a three or four game stretch, where you just thought, okay, wow, this is really encouraging. Like this is a star kind of developing for us. And then it kind of flipped when she went down into the desert. I don't know if the team ever really recovered from that trip because she gets hurt down there, you know, and comes back. And I think gives it, you know, she plays through a bunch, which is a thing is really admirable, but just never really was the same until we got into the WNIT, you started seeing it. And of course, in the final game where they lose to Washington, she goes down with a hip injury and, you know, she doesn't end up being able to play at full strength. So do you have those splits at the end of non-conference? Because I wanted to show the disparity there because I know she, in conference play, she only averaged about 11 points per game. And this was somebody who had a run there to close non-conference where I was like, man, she's going to be the focal point offensively and not India, because I think she was leading the team in scoring through that point.
Yeah, I don't have the splits, but I have like this 5 or 6 game stretch where she went bonkers. It started off with 10 points against Oregon State, which is always a tough matchup with her. But then she went for 26, for 13, 26, 29, 17, 4, clunker, 16 and 18 to begin conference play against Arizona State and Arizona. And then, yeah, like you said, she just – it just – injuries finally kind of caught up to her, and she just dropped off from there, like 10 points, 3 points, the 20-point night, and then 11 – 15, 16, 10. It, you know, it's a sharp contrast to what she was doing at the end of non-con play.
I'm curious if you agree with this, Jared. It felt like she was always going to have some issues going against bigger, longer, more athletic interior players in terms of getting to her spots and getting looks she liked. I think she had a really hard time with the bad ankle because I just don't know if she could elevate the way she needed to or felt as confident planting. And it just seemed like a lot of the times she'd turn and go up with it and there would be immediate contact. And it's like either the officials are going to call it or it's a shot that's not going to be remotely close or pretty low percentage. So, you know, there was a stretch that was, I think it was tough, and that bore out, I think, in her field goal percentage during a run there where it was just like, okay, you don't know if she's going to go, you know, depending on the matchup, she can go score 20 points. But if it's against a longer, more athletic team, she has a really hard time. And I know Kelly has said a couple of times that one of the big things this offseason is going to be to get her healthy and to work on those ankles because she went through a lot physically this year. And again, during a very similar stretch where Tahina was struggling, you also had Grace kind of going through this thing physically where she was in and out of the lineup, hardly practicing. When she was out there, it was, again, hit or miss. I think the matchups played a big role. I mean, if she had a little bit of a size advantage, she was fine getting to spots and scoring. But, you know, I distinctly remember issues going against, like, USC and Arizona and even UCLA where she just Oregon State in particular, actually, that was a tough one too, but just where there's just, she just has, couldn't elevate over the size. So that's probably something she needs to work on in general, but I don't think the injury part helped.
No, it definitely didn't help. And not only is it just elevation, but it's also acceleration too, to try to get, you know, past the defender, which, you know, I would say she's kind of undersized, especially now at this point as a true freshman, but in general, a little bit undersized, you're playing the four. But when you have Philly next to her, it makes it total sense as something of a stretch forward, like an old school, like a LaMarcus, like someone who can hit a mid-range jumper, like Chris Bosh back in the day, who could was a stretch forward, but not by today's standards. But her acceleration and her lack of real athleticism after that first initial ankle injury just kind of hindered her. She was more of a back-to-the-basket player, and which she can do, but only against certain competition. And, you know, she had that mid-range jump shot working every once in a while, specifically against like a 2-3 defense where she could just sit at the top of the zone.
It was hit and miss.
But it's hard.
I said, it was pretty hit and miss with that shot. It was very inconsistent. Yeah. Either she had it or it was a complete, it wasn't worth taking.
Mm-hmm. And when she had it, it was great. It stretched the defense. It stretched out Oregon's offense, allowed the guards to kind of play through them. And it's just kind of tough when that jump shot isn't working, and then you really only have you have two post bigs down there. This is a similar problem that the men's team ran into, where there isn't a lot of shooting out there. And you look at, obviously, Tahina didn't shoot well. Indy Rogers was inconsistent from three. I know she finished 38% from the field, or excuse me, from behind the 3-point line. But then you have people like, or players like Taya Hansen and Elise Hurst, who really struggled from beyond the arc.
The thing is that the numbers end up being pretty good, which is the wild thing when you look at it. It's like, if you don't watch the games, it's like the numbers are pretty good.
For some, right. But, you know, Elise Hurst was 4-for-42 in Pac-12 play from deep.
Right. Oh, I'm perfectly aware of that.
Yeah. And that's not great. But yeah, towards the end of the season, like all the numbers kind of checked out. But during that losing streak, I mean, they couldn't hit anything. That was the biggest issue. I mean, they shot 36% from against Stanford, 35% against Southern Cal, 37, 37, 39 in four straight losses on the road. I mean, that's just, you can't come back for them. 26% from deep, 23% from deep. Those numbers are just, you're never going to win a basketball game if you shoot like that. And especially when you only have, you know, Indy Rogers, who's really leading the show at that point during the season. Good luck. And, you know, this comes back to Grace, where, you know, they needed her as another option if somebody else wasn't going to step up. And it's hard to rely on Chance Gray as somebody who can step up, who's, you know, ball handling needs to get better, and just the shot making needs to improve in general. But for Grace, like those injuries, like we were saying, it just, you know, limited her offensive versatility, limited her athleticism, limited her jumping ability, limited her on defense as well. And those are tough injuries to come back from. And then this goes into the point where they only had 9 scholarship players to play. And if you take Grace out of the game because she's just too hurt, which certainly was an option and certainly was a possibility during this time, you have 8. And suddenly someone gets in foul trouble, you have 7. Wasn't great.
Well, and actually, one other thing I wanted to mention with the Grace thing, that just from a physical thing, that I think so much of what made her successful early was her face-up game and her ability with one dribble to kind of explode past the defender. And that was a part I also thought you kind of saw kind of disappear a little bit. I wanted to kind of acknowledge. Let's get a little bit into kind of what might be next, or kind of what are some questions going into this offseason. Recording this Wednesday morning around 10. It was funny because I was messaging Jared and Matt about how, the timing of this is going to work out great because we're going to be able to react to whatever the Indy Rogers news is, ends up being Tuesday evening, because there's this WNBA deadline, and, you know, surely she'll have said something by the time we record the podcast, and that'll be kind of the launching off point. I said, I think was the word I used for the off season of like, okay, this is the direction they're going. Well, didn't happen. As far as we know, unless Jared, you can check socials to see if something's changed, but as far as we know, no news. Nothing. From India.
No news. And
it signals one of two outcomes, which is, unless she secretly told the WNBA and just hasn't made it public, she's probably going back to college. And in that case, she's either going to Oregon or she's going to look somewhere else. And I do think if she was entirely confident in her decision, she might have just announced it, you know, already. When she said that I'm not going to go to the WNBA, maybe she's deliberating. Maybe this is all for naught, and she's not somebody who's going to use social media that way, and we'll just find out somewhere. Maybe Kelly Graves will have a press conference and just tell us. I don't know. But sort of a weird dynamic here where, I thought that we would be having a little bit more clarity around the team construction for next year going into this podcast, and we don't really have very much, Jared. So, I don't know. What do you make of the fact that we had a deadline there to determine for those listening, there was a 5 p.m. deadline Tuesday for India to make an announcement in terms of if she was going to be entering the WNBA draft, and that deadline came and passed, and there was no news. And as of, again, this recording, that continues to be the case. So, it seems pretty clear she's not entering the WNBA draft, but where is she playing collegiately next year is the question.
This is an interesting one because I feel like it's a hard deadline. It's a 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time deadline. And maybe she just hasn't announced publicly what she's going to do. And maybe she wants to keep that under wraps. But I feel like the WNBA would release another updated list of people who are entering the WNBA draft. And that hasn't happened yet.
We should note, Jared, that the WNBA did release its list of about 100 names yesterday, or 70 names, wherever right. It was. And she wasn't included.
Yeah, but that was before her deadline. So right. There's still the chance that they could release a new list with India Rogers on it. Sure. I don't anticipate that happening. I would say this favors Oregon that it's going longer than the specified deadline. I think you bring up a good point that she could just say all right, I'm going to she could also declare for the draft and then maintain college eligibility as well. So that's an idea. She could do a Sedona Prince. I don't know if you saw this, where she declared for the draft and then also declared to enter the transfer portal, which, okay, it's an interesting move. I've never seen that one before, but that's certainly a possibility. I guess India could do that as well. Oregon can't afford to lose her, though. I think she was the best player on the team this past season, a year before that. She's grown into this, you know, potential first round draft pick. I think she was like a second round mock pick in the most recent WNBA draft mocks. And I still think that she's the most valuable player on this team. I think that there could potentially be an issue with her and Tahina Paopao coexisting on the court next season. So maybe it's if India comes back, Tahina might leave, or the other way around, if Tahina stays and India might leave. So I there's just something different about on the court stuff with those two. I've never seen like it really coexisted for some reason. But I think if you're Oregon, I think you want her back. I think this is a similar issue as the men's team, where you have Nafali Dante, who could declare for the NBA draft or could come back to Oregon. And, you know, if he does come back to college, obviously if you're Oregon, you want him back. But and he still has an opportunity to go play somewhere else. And I don't think that she would, you know, go back to play at USC or something like that. But it wouldn't surprise me if she did enter the transfer portal that she would pick another Pac-12 school, because she's that caliber of a player. I think that would just be a huge loss if she picks a different school. And obviously a big loss if she picks the WNBA, but that would, you know, progress her career. And that's exactly what you want to see out of her.
She plays elsewhere. I would look back maybe more where she's from, which would be Texas, maybe some school in Louisiana. That makes sense. But we'll see what happens there. Again, I don't have any insight in terms of more than what we've shared about what may or may not happen. But as Jared said, I think, you know, it's funny because I had a couple of people pose this question for me in the last couple of days of, okay, if you had a choice between hypothetically Tahina or India to build around, with the understanding that Tahina has two seasons, India has one, what choice would you make? And it's kind of tough. Like, these are two pretty darn good players. And again, I think the thing I agree that they had a hard time coexisting. And actually, Jared, I think the thing that really made it tough was it not just that you had two undersized guards back there, but you had three that you were playing the bulk of minutes. And I think that's a tough roster construction. And again, I for those listening that like maybe are newish to women's basketball, I don't know if this is fair. I don't know if the people use this. I add 6 inches to a women's basketball player, and that gives you the equivalent to me like a men's player. Like Oregon's backcourt would be the same as Dana throwing a 6'1 point guard out there with a 6'3 shooting guard and a 6'3 small forward. That's kind of what they were running. So that's a really small backcourt, and that's going to be a backcourt that you're going to have at least one player out there who's going to be, you know, defensively at a disadvantage just purely from a size perspective, and maybe a couple. Chance Gray, I think, at least was such a darn good defender, one of the best defenders, honestly, that the Oregon has had in a while, at least on the perimeter. So that helped a little bit. But I think that part was, again, going back a little bit to some of the whys they had issues. When you have three kind of undersized guards that you're playing basically 30 minutes a game each, I think not basically they were, that's a tough setup. And so, but to the point I was kind of getting to a moment ago about the Tahina Endia thing, I will be very curious to see what happens with both, because there is, Endia has, it sounds like, a decision to make. Tahina was, I would say, certainly non-committal. When media asked her a couple of weeks ago about what she was thinking about for after the season, she said there was a lot to think about. So, like, I think you're kind of just here waiting. And if one of them leaves, that really hurts. Both are really good players. I think you can sustain, though, and have a pretty darn decent roster next year if it's just one of them. If both leave, that's really hard, and that puts a ton of pressure on whatever you're going to get done in the transfer portal. And it also puts even more pressure on the shoulders of these young guys, because again, I feel really good, I think, as most fans do probably, about like, hey, if you had a young core of Chance Gray, Grace Frantz-Luton, Philly Che, you know, Kennedy Basham, we saw some glimpses there that were at least, you know, she defended the round the rim okay. You know, she's definitely not physically developed enough in a way. I mean, she gets pushed off her spot and ends up on the ground a lot, but like, I think there's some really positive things that you saw there, and you can see the developmental traits if she can stay healthy. But like, what else is around this group is going to be the question. And they have three prep players, kind of, because one of them was already enrolled, Sammy Wagner, but Sophia Bell, who was just playing in the McDonald's All-American game yesterday, Sarah Rambus, and then kind of a cool story that'll be the fall of next year would be Bella Hamill, who's a local kid, was playing over at Lane Community College. Kelly Graves, one of his sons, was the assistant coach over on the squad there, and said, hey, this girl's pretty good. Kelly took a look, and they've decided to bring her on. So, you know, a little bit of a local flavor there, but certainly not enough to you say, hey, oh, cool, they're done adding. And I think it was notable as well that Kelly, who a year ago, and we can get into some of this if we want, really was hesitant to hit the portal too hard, because I don't think he wanted to. I think he kept saying end the cycle of turnover here, because the last year they had all those players leave because they brought in some players. There was just too many, you know, we use the term too many cooks in the kitchen, so to speak. And they wanted to end that. And this year it kind of bit him. He used the Goldilocks comparison of, hey, like, we went with too big of a roster. It was too much. We went too small of a roster. It was a problem. We got to find the middle number. So this offseason, they're going to be a little bit more active there. Jared, what do you think our portal needs? Because Kelly said they want to add three for sure and maybe more. Some of this will be dependent upon Endia, Tahina, and I've been told that no one else is like really a portal or a transfer possibility, but who knows? You never know, things happen. But like, what do you think are some things that the Ducks need to find themselves in the portal?
Are we assuming that both India and Tahina are coming back, or are we assuming that one of them comes back?
Well, if we assume one of them comes back, then I think, yeah, let's assume one of them comes back, then that puts you in a spot where you're not having, well, let's just say this, if both of them leave, you are having to find a guard like one of them in the portal, and that's the very number, that's the top piece.
Absolutely.
And there are some good players in the portal we could talk about maybe, but that would be absolutely number one. If one of them, if neither of them are back, they need to find someone synonymous to that out there.
Yeah, 100%. And if one of them comes back, I still think you need another guard, because you're losing some players this season just due to graduation. I think you need another backup big. I think you could bring in somebody who could be absolutely competitive with Filipina Che. And not to say like kind of a, like push her out, but give her some competition. I think that's as good as Filipina is as a rebounder and as a defender. There's a lot left to be desired on the offensive end. And I think having a big who can pass the ball, who can maybe shoot a little, but at least can convert easy layup opportunities is kind of a bread and butter to what Kelly Graves likes to do. And I know it's really hard to just say, oh, look what Ruthie Heber did, but because she was just such a tremendous player and one of the, you know, one of the best players in program history. But, you know, she got a lot of easy opportunities on those teams. And Philly gets a lot of potential easy opportunities on those teams, on this team. And with her lack of just basketball experience, because she's only been playing for 4 or 5 years, right, Eric?
I think it's four. 4 years. Yeah, it's four.
It's just, yeah, and it's just harder for her. And that's fine. She's a wonderful player. She's a wonderful person. I think it would behoove Oregon to maybe bring in some competition. And the idea of having Philly as your backup center sounds really great to me. But other than that, they need to add players like Taya Hansen and Jenna Asai. They need to add 5'10" to 6'1" wings who could shoot and play defense. And I know that sounds wonderful, and there should be plenty of those, but those players don't grow on trees. And so Kelly Graves is going to really have to be active in the recruiting cycle. I think you look for a player to line up alongside Chance Gray and Grace Van Sluten. I don't think you look for depth. I don't think you look for reserves here. I think you look for big time players. I think you look for starters. Like day one, hey, like you've proven your success at X school. We want you to do it at Oregon now. So we're recruiting you to start. We're recruiting you, not going to guarantee a starting spot or anything like that. But you know, if you play the same as you did at your previous institution, you're going to be starting here for Oregon. So I think guards, at least one guard, at least a backup guard who can shoot. And then give me multiple of the 5'10 to 6'1", 6'2", shoot small forward range, maybe a stretch four, a real stretch four that can hit the threes. And then, yeah, give me a competable or a competition center, someone who can maybe make a swing at Philly.
To me, the absolute number one, assuming that they don't have to go find an Endia Tahina replacement, mm-hmm. is what Jared talked about with those big wings. I think, you know, you look back at some of the rosters that were, well, they're just the best teams that Kelly's had. They had Satu Sabli, and then they also had players off the bench like an Adi Gilda. I know she's not a perimeter player, but she was at least a bigger athlete who was kind of maybe physical, and they're just kind of lacking some of that physicality and size and length from the perimeter. And even last year, there were a couple of players that they didn't use a ton, but Shania Pinto went to Penn State, Taylor Bigby, who was kind of recruited with this sort of a role in mind. You know, Sophia Bell, by the way, we should note, if anybody watched the McDonald's game, she's definitely fits this bill. And I think a best case world fits, is,
yeah, exactly.
She comes in as a big 6'1", you know, perimeter player who's one of the better defenders nationally, was her reputation coming in, and a developing perimeter scorer. Maybe she comes in and she's off, you know, right off the bat, she's able to either start or play big minutes. That would be a great outcome. But to Jared's point,
and
I think they need to find a marquee player too. You go ahead, Jared.
I was just going to mention that Sammy Wagner is another girl who's listed at 6'1", at least on her ESPN profile. So
yeah,
she could fit the bill as well. But she's been enrolled with the team, learning. So she'll have a leg up on the competition when the other freshmen get here or the transfers get here. But I was going to continue on with what you were saying,
which was, just talking about the big wings. They need big wings.
They need a difference maker. They need a marquee player.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, and that part too is absolutely, I think, a valuable point here. You know, and again, I think a big part of this offseason is going to be twofold: is what can you add in the portal? You have to find difference makers, and then another big part here is just player development. What mm-hmm. can you get from this younger group here? How much better can they get? A player like Grace Van Sluten, you think, man, gosh, if she can stay healthy, if she can get a little more explosive, she can develop a more consistent shot. Her free throw percentage started to improve at the end of the season, which was encouraging. She can get a little bit more quick afoot and be a little better defensively. Filipina Che obviously has pretty clear, I mean, she's an awesome rebounder. That was the third best rebounding season in school history, by the way, which is kind of crazy. You know, she averaged almost 11 rebounds a game. Offensively, she has a ton to work on. And I think, I would imagine, she is very well aware of that. She struggles with every part of the post-basketball game, from catching the basketball to what to do when she catches it, to finishing it, to, you know, to her footwork and avoiding travels and post moves where she turns directly into somebody for a foul. So she has a lot to work on. There's also some really encouraging stuff. Like, I think we have both acknowledged in the past, we think really highly of her, but certainly they need more there. And I'm with Jared of like, if you can go find somebody in the portal who's a step up and who's better, I think you go and do it. As much as it's fun to kind of, you know, focus on this developmenting, you know, developmental player and somebody who, again, I think the ceiling could be really high. Not that you want to give up on her, but if you can, like, I think next year's a really big year, and I don't think you can do another developmental season. I don't think you can have another year where you miss on the big dance, or even if you make it and you get ousted right away as one of the few last teams in. Like, I think the expectation needs to be that you're taking a big step here, and we'll see if they can do that. And that's why I think the portal's got to be so important. But again, the first order of business is retaining some of these key players that, again, these two guards kind of are pivotal with everything. So.
Yeah, it all comes down to what the two guards do. If they both come back, and again, I think that is more of you probably drop the need for landing another guard in the portal, because then you're going to have three guards. And, you know, like we mentioned earlier in the podcast, just, you know, starting three guards who are all like under 6 feet is not it. That just can't be sustainable on both offense and defense. Maybe a little bit more on offense than defense, but. You know, then you move Gray to the bench, or maybe you think that Tahina is best suited in a bench role as a six girl. I don't know, not a six man, but
sixth player,
the first player off the bench, just because, you know, she came out and publicly said, like, you know, I got better when I got more reps, I got more involved in the offense, I got the ball more just in general. So maybe she's better suited to be a sixth player and come be the first player off the bench. And maybe you move her to the bench, you start Gray because it's a perimeter defense against or alongside Rodgers or whatever. But at that point, if both of them come back, you need to throw some wings out there, some 6'1" wings who can shoot and play defense. And, you know, hopefully that there's one in the portal who Kelly might have a connection with that can come and be an instant difference maker on this team, because it's not only just about adding shooting and defensive abilities. It's about adding a player who's going to help win ball games. And I know that those shooting and defense does help win games, but I think they need more than just those two attributes. I think they need someone who's going to be able to put up 12 to 15 points a night. If Rodgers or Pau, if they have an off game, or if Grace has an off game, like, they're another option, because that's what made Oregon teams in the past so deadly, is that someone has an off game, there's another person right there to step up and put up some points. So it's going to be a very important offseason.
It sure will be. And it'll be, I mean, the information will probably be fast and furious here. It seems like once the ball gets rolling and when somebody makes an announcement, other decisions are made. I think presumably Endy is the first shoe to drop, and then whatever her decision does, right. I won't say makes decisions for the players, but it certainly provides more information and could inform them on what they might want to do. We will have coverage of that on Duck Territory, whatever she decides to do. We have coverage of who they add through the portal. We'll have coverage of, hey, if Endia and Tahina both leave, do other players start kind of looking around? Is that a domino effect start there? I don't know, but you know, players want to play on good teams, so you probably want to avoid that outcome if possible. But we'll kind of be following this. I'm not sure how much we'll talk about in the podcast unless there's just a crazy amount of news. And maybe once we get on the other side of spring football in April, maybe in May will be a good time to start looking at kind of where things are at when some of the dust has settled. But regardless, thanks for this episode of the Odds and Audibles podcast. Eric Scopel, Jared Mack. Talk to you later, folks.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.